It's a great pleasure to introduce my roommate. I've just gotten to know her myself. This is Becky Braden, who is Marv Braden's wife, who is the special teams coach for the Denver Broncos. And she was sitting there studying away before dinner, and I'm anxious to hear what you have to say. Becky?
When I began several weeks ago to put some thoughts together for this evening, I began thinking about how much the lives of coaches' wives and professional athletes' wives resemble that of legislative wives or wives who are just in the whose husbands are in the political arena. And I have no doubt that our husbands share many of the same problems as well as us. For instance, most people, men in particular, but it's getting to the point where a lot of women also, think that they can do my husband's job equally well, if not better, than he can. I'm sure you can all identify with that. Most men were born to be coaches. They just took up more serious work to support their families. I know that you can understand long absences from home, very long hours, and inattentiveness. Have you ever sat and tried to talk to your husband and felt like you were talking to a wall? And maybe you can understand fertilizing the yard. You really haven't lived until you've taken on that chore. And I did it twice. And I proudly would sit back and be very proud of my accomplished task and watch the lawn green up in stripes. And when you do that in the fall and you put the last, or early fall, to put the last fertilizing on, when it greens up in stripes, you have stripes all winter. So you're very grateful for the snow. So if you haven't tried it, you might give it a whirl. I don't do it anymore. My husband found someone to do it for us. No doubt you also understand that somewhat insecure feeling of here today and gone tomorrow. One thing I'm very sure of in this profession that we are in, there are very few coaches, and I might add probably very few professional athletes, who ever get the opportunity to feel indispensable. In the coaching ranks, there's a joke that goes around that every coach has heard and knows very well, that there are two kinds of coaches. There are the coaches who will be fired and the coaches who have been fired. And normally you fit on one side or the other. So we don't settle in too far. We kind of keep our feet pretty close to the ground and don't get too attached to things. My husband has been coaching for 20 years. In those 20 years, we've lived from Pennsylvania to California, Texas to Michigan, and several points in between. When I was sharing this with my husband, giving him some idea of what I was going to be talking about, he said, "Would you just kind of tell him that I haven't been fired that many times?" That never occurred to me, but I could kind of get his point. Most of those, all those moves, with the exception of one, which we try to forget, were choices we made to move on to something more exciting or more challenging. One of my hobbies is decorating the house I happen to be living in for the next occupant. If I make a poor decision, I don't worry too much about it because I've never lived more than 3 years in the same house anyway. We are currently starting our fourth year, so maybe we're going to break a record this year. One of my secrets, and don't tell my husband this, is that I always leave one window, what I call undressed. I found out very early in our marriage that as soon as that last window had something over it besides a sheet, he'd pop through the door and say, "Guess what?" And I usually don't have too much difficulty knowing what "guess what" means. Of course, I'm being a little facetious, but honest. I come from a small town in Missouri, and my biggest trip as a youngster was to go visit relatives in Illinois and Arkansas, maybe once, or if I was lucky, twice a year. In the past 20 years, I've had a great adventure. We have lived in all these different states around the country, and we have met many wonderful friends from all over the country. And think of all the places we have to go to visit if we ever get the time. It's been fun to live in various parts of the country among people with different backgrounds, like people in Pennsylvania who say paper bag instead of paper sack, or who say, "Isn't it a beautiful day?" instead of, "Isn't it a beautiful day?" People in California who have never seen a basement. Have you ever just tried to describe a basement to somebody who's always lived in a house on a concrete slab floor. They just can't quite understand that. When Lois asked me to share with you how my faith has helped me in the ups and downs of the coaching profession, I thought it was a very appropriate subject, because it does seem in the coaching profession that you're either up or you're down. There isn't a whole lot in between. And I will say this, for me, it takes about 3 ups to overcome 1 down. I am not a good loser. Just ask my husband. I always give him the 3rd degree after every game, but he says I'm a lot tougher after we lose. I think along the same lines as Vince Lombardi, who said winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. And I'm sure there are quite a few of you here tonight who can identify and know exactly what I mean. You may be able to build character from defeat, but there sure isn't any fun in it. I can remember one season in college football, fortunately a good many years ago, where every Saturday the score was 60-0, 42-6, 54-0, and our team wasn't winning. Let me tell you, we built a lot of character that year. Then there are those people who say, well, it's just a game. I get cold shivers every time I hear that. To spectators, it may be just a game, but there are a lot of players' wives here today who can verify that it most certainly is more than just a game to them. But we have had our share of ups. There's hardly anything more fun than winning a hard-fought game or finally overcoming a long-time rival. I suppose one of the most satisfying wins that I can remember in recent years has to be the victory over Oakland in Oakland. These are victories we savor and remember over the years, and it does help make up for the long absences and make them more bearable. These 20 years have been enriched through a growing awareness that no matter where we go, God goes with us, and his people are always there to meet us. What a blessing to arrive in a new state, a new job, a new house, and then to meet someone who is a Christian believer, and you have a sudden friendship through a common bond. What a blessing to realize that God is always at least one step ahead of us, preparing the way. It has made the experience of moving a thing to be anticipated rather than to be dreaded. It was not always so for us, however. The first 10 years of our marriage was truly trial and error. Lots of trials and lots of errors. We had the best things in life, but we had a void in our marriage and our personal lives that could not be met through ambition and material things. Fortunately, we came in contact with people who had a great influence on our lives at a very critical time in our marriage. Through a series of family life seminars that were offered by our church and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, we began to meet people who seemed to have filled that void in their lives. Marv and I had both been Christians since we were very young, but in the hustle and bustle of early marriage, starting a family, ambition to achieve goals, we had settled in to a humdrum religious syndrome. We felt the need to attend church, to see that our daughter had the proper religious training, and so on, but we were missing the joy that we should have been receiving. Through the seminars and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, we began to grow spiritually and came to recognize that religion is man reaching up to God, but Christianity is God reaching down to man. And Jesus Christ is the bridge that joins us to God. Man cannot be reached to God, cannot reach God except through Jesus Christ. That's why he came, to complete the link between God and man. In short, Christianity is not a religion. It is a relationship with Jesus Christ. With that basis to our belief, we begin to see changes in our lives that only God could make. The old things we used to do for entertainment suddenly had no appeal to us. We got excited about studying the Bible and were and still are amazed at what it has to say to help us through the problems that we face today. The first 10 years of our marriage, I blamed my husband for our lack of spiritual growth. I kept praying for God to change him and make him the spiritual leader that he should be. After all, it was his responsibility. Then one night in a family life seminar, the speaker asked a very soul-searching question directed straight at me. Have you been asking God to change someone else? Have you been telling God that when you get all those bad things in your life cleared up, you'll ask him into your life? He might as well have been talking to me personally. He said, you take care of your own life and let God take care of the other person. Give those bad things into your life to him and let him work them out of your life. Well, I thought, that's a new approach. But I'm not the one who needs to change. I only nag and harass him because he's not doing what God wants him to. He's the one who needs to do something. But I realized that that nagging wasn't accomplishing anything. And my prayers to change him just bounced back at me. So finally, I begin to pray. And I begin to say, change me. Change me. That week, I was able to commit my life to the Lord. And all those bad things that I kept using as an excuse, my lack of patience, my sharp tongue, my nagging, he took them all, and the burden I carried was lifted. I wish I could tell you that he just erased all those things from my life and that I became a quiet and gentle spirit. But it wouldn't take very long for you to find out that that just isn't true. But he did come into my life, and things did begin to change. From that day in October of 1972 to this, our lives have taken on a new and exciting dimension. It truly was the beginning of a new and beautiful relationship with God and with my husband. The amazing thing was that when I began to pray for God to change me, guess who he also started changing? He began changing Dr. Marv and working in his life and bringing him into a closer relationship with him, and I didn't have to do a thing. It was only when I was willing to take responsibility for my own lack of spiritual growth that God could do anything in my life. The last 10 years have been a time of growing, seeking, trusting, failing, being forgiven, failing again, and being forgiven again. He has seen us through great sorrow and great joy. In 1975, I found one of those dreaded lumps that women fear most. My doctor immediately scheduled a surgeon to do the biopsy. I entered the hospital the night before the biopsy, and it was then that the events of those short few days really closed in on me. And I began to think, hey, wait a minute, this is happening to me. You know, these are things that happen to other people, but this is happening to me. I remembered watching Betty Ford and Happy Rockefeller the fall before in their public appearances and thinking to myself, how can they do that? I knew if this should ever happen to me, that I could never, ever live with it. Then I found myself facing the very thing I believed I could not face. That night, alone in the hospital room, I knew there was only one thing I could do. I said, Lord, I can't go through this on my own. Please grant me what I need to get through it. If this tumor is malignant, I cannot live with the result of surgery. You will have to change my whole attitude and my whole being because I cannot do it myself. But I was willing for God to work in my life. As I lay there contemplating what tomorrow might hold for me, I felt a great peace and love that just closed in over me, and I knew without doubt that God was in control and that I was in his hands. And it was all right from then on. The tumor was malignant, and the surgeon performed a mastectomy the next morning. It did change my life, but in a way I would not have thought possible just a few short days before. God was faithful. I could not have accepted it without him. He changed me and gave me what I needed at a time I needed it most, and at a time when I had no resources of my own to draw on. I believe he prepares us and does not allow things in our lives before we are ready. One of the great blessings that he has given me is that I do not live in fear of reoccurrence. I know it can happen, but I also know that he is in control, and I can rely on him because I've been through it before, and he didn't let me down. I might also add that the love and support of my husband was an added blessing. The trauma of that event in our lives has drawn us closer together and made us increasingly aware of what is truly important in our lives. Then, in June of last year, I lost my mother very suddenly, prematurely, and completely without warning. She and my dad were on their first trip abroad. We'd looked forward to it with them for many, many months. It was something my mother had wanted to do for a long time. They'd been retired about 4 or 5 years, and my dad did not like to travel. She would come to Denver to visit, and she'd come. I'd always say, now you come 2 weeks ahead, and don't let Daddy come with you. Because I knew if he would come, he'd stay 2 days, then he'd go home. But finally, his twin sister, my dad's twin sister, and her husband were going, and they called and asked my mom and dad to go with them. And it's the only person in the world that my dad would have gone with. And he accepted and said, yes, we'll go. And so from January through May, we look forward to this trip for them, excited, enthusiastic, and knowing they were going to have a tremendous time. And then the call came from Warrington, England, that she was gone. And never again in this life could I tell her how important she was to me. We had had a beautiful relationship for 20 years, and I'm very, very grateful for that. But once again, I said to God, I can't go through this on my own strength. And once again, I was able to draw on His strength. The peace and security that He can give in times like that became very, very real to me again. Oh, my grief is still there, and the heartache persists, and I miss her. But I know that she is in His presence, and that He chose that time to take her home. And the security I have in that is the only thing that makes it bearable. I do not believe that God causes these things to happen in our lives, but I believe He allows them. We all have to deal with heartache in this life. And I am grateful to know there is a God who cares and is there to provide strength beyond my human ability. Through these experiences, I have learned to thank Him for the sorrow as well as the joy. And God is a part of the joy. What could be more fun than to have a season like the Broncos had in 1977, ending up in the Super Bowl? But how easy it is to forget Him when the times are good. How easy to get caught up in the glamour and attention and fail to give Him the credit. One of our goals as a family is to always give Him the credit for the good things we have and not just to turn to Him in a time of trouble or need. Our first year in professional football was the year the Broncos went to the Super Bowl. Not many rookies get that opportunity, and as everyone knows, not many veterans get that opportunity. It was truly one of the fun times. But as the season wore on that year, we noticed that it was easy to get caught up in the attention and the glamour that goes with the spotlight. We realized we were getting caught up in the ego thing and really didn't like what it was doing to us. Our church has a Sunday evening worship service at 6 o'clock every Sunday evening, and on the days the Broncos played at home, we discovered we could just slip out of the stadium in time to get to church and in the back door for that evening service. We have continued to do that for the last 2 years. It provides us with the opportunity to worship together and to enjoy the music and fellowship that are so much a part of that evening service. We don't do it to impress people, but to keep everything in perspective for us. The season is very hectic and affords little time for spiritual growth or development. This has become a very special time for us as a family and has become a priority in our lives. We find as the season progresses the temptation to get caught up in the excitement, enthusiasm of winning, or the depression and frustration of losing becomes very strong. It's those ups and downs again. It is very easy to let success lead you away from God, and it is also very easy to blame God for our lack of success. That 6 o'clock service has become a great leveler for us. Whichever direction we are leaning when we enter, it quickly brings us back to what is, or at least should be, real in our lives. One thing I have learned over the years is that you can come down a lot quicker than you can go up. If we cannot give God the credit when we're up, how can we turn to Him when we are down? I have found I need Him in my life during the good times as well as the bad. Have you ever thought about how much you would be missing if your children only came to you in trouble and never shared their joy with you? I think that's how God feels a good deal of the time. If you are facing a difficult situation right now, give it to the Lord and allow Him to take over. He wants to become the center of your life and to make your burdens lighter. If things are going well for you, why not try thanking Him for the good things in your life? Start incorporating Him into your daily living. He can truly become your friend. We are created by God to have fellowship with Him. He gave us a spirit that makes it possible for this communion with Him to be complete. If we ignore this part of our lives, we are allowing a part of our being to be unfulfilled, and this creates that void that only God can fill. No matter what your spiritual gain, no matter how you fill your lives, only God can fill that spiritual void because it was created by Him for Him. It is the one thing that gives direction and purpose to our lives. I have a list of scripture verses that I keep over my kitchen sink to constantly remind me of His love for me. I have a tendency toward pessimism. In fact, my husband used to tell me I was the most negative person he knew. But God is working that out in my life. This list keeps my perspective on the right path, especially those days when nothing seems to go right. It is called my Never Again list and goes like this. Never again will I confess I can't, for I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. Never again will I confess lack, for my God shall supply all my needs according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. Never again will I confess fear, for God hath not given me the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Never again will I confess doubt or lack of faith, for God hath given to every man the measure of faith. Never again will I confess weakness, for God is for the Lord is the strength of my life, and the people that know their God shall be strong and do exploits. Never again will I confess the supremacy of Satan over my life, for greater is he that is within me than he that is in the world. Have you committed your life to the Lord? Do you know the power of praise and thanksgiving, or do you turn to him only in time of need? He has given us power to use in our lives every day to overcome obstacles that beset us, but we need to be committed to him, so that never again will we allow those obstacles to control our lives. If you haven't made that step of faith, don't put it off. Say to God, change me, and then be willing to do it. You'll be glad you did. Father, I thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening to share with these ladies.